Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So as anticipated, yesterday, Daryl Brooks was charged with five counts of intentional homicide. Five counts of first-degree murder.
Good.
Five are dead. 48, at least 48 are wounded. Some seriously, their lives still in jeopardy.
Well, there's 18 children at the Milwaukee Children's Hospital, and two of those kids are in critical condition.
10 are in intensive care of the 18. And we know that, as we discussed yesterday, when he was a person of interest, that he has a long criminal history. We know that he was bonded out on a $1,000 bond as recently as last Friday for allegedly trying to hit the mother of his child with
a car,
his vehicle.
Yes. And that vehicle is in a rap song that he did because he's a wannabe rapper and he's just a despicable human being. He should not have been out in the first place.
So why someone with as violent a history as he has, including sexual crimes? He's a registered sex offender or should have been in Nevada.
Of course.
Why he gets $1,000 out on a $1,000 bond while trying to injure or kill the mother of a child of his as just his most recent run-in with the law. Remarkable. John Chisholm. Remember John Chisholm, not just for being a Soros-funded hack, as we described yesterday, but also for his unjustified witch hunt of the donors of Scott Walker back when Scott Walker was governor.
Right.
That's the same John Chisholm.
That's the same partisan, dude. I remember that.
Partisan Soros-funded hack. So at minimum here, we're going to have a conversation. Well, we're going to extend the conversation we've been having, but maybe it'll start getting wider audience about this turnstile justice in the criminal justice system, more focus on these Soros-funded non-prosecution prosecutors. By the way, the reporting yesterday, including from CNN, a local law enforcement source, tells us that he may have been fleeing a knife fight.
A domestic battery that they weren't able to check out because of the chaos that ensued because of the parade. What happened in the parade?
I'm sorry, five counts of first-degree murder. First-degree murder requires premeditation.
Yeah, and I know, and I got into it with Mike Scott, because, like, well, he didn't mean to drive through. I'm like, what are you talking about? He used his car to plow down people. He knew exactly what he was doing. This is terrorism, domestic terrorism. I don't care what label it. He's a murderer. I mean, he wasn't just driving through the parade to be part of the parade. He intentionally mowed down those people. He's a sick man who should have been behind bars. And he used his vehicle in the past as a weapon to try and kill. And this time he was successful and he killed five people and more might die this weekend. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Can this Chisholm guy, could he be recalled somehow? Can he be fired from his job? I don't know how the process works.
He can be fired for his job and getting de-elected by the Milwaukee County voters who elected him. The same way that Kim Fox can be fired from her job. So that's the question, whether this will perhaps focus on people's attention, whether, you know, grannies being mowed down by this maniac in his car, this habitual criminal in his car during a Christmas Day parade, will that get people's attention when it comes to how our criminal justice system operates under the sentimental, barbarian, non-prosecution prosecutors? I ask again.
Virginia Sorensen, 79, one of the dancing grannies Leanna Owens, Tamara Dunrad, 52, James Coolidge, who's married to one of the dancing grannies, and then an 82-year-old as well.
Ugh. Right, the five dead range in age from early 50s to 82. Early 80s, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yep, 82 years old is the oldest. Mm-hmm. And the youngest victim is 3 years old, who's still fighting for their life in the hospital.
You know, and this is a national problem that manifests itself in local jurisdictions. But we know this all too well in Cook County. But it's a national problem that I think is going to provide at least some of the backdrop for our national elections come next year. San Francisco, we got another Soros-funded prosecutor who we've spoken about before, Chase Abodin. In the last 3 days, you've had three massive smash-and-grab robberies of big retailers in San Francisco. The Louis Vuitton store, Nordstrom's.
And then Lululemon.
And then yesterday, yeah, it was Lululemon and
Macy's.
Another store, Macy's.
Yeah. 50 people yesterday, by the way. They don't care. The lawlessness, they don't care. They know what the rules are, these criminals do. So they get a gang together so that they can't get caught, because the more people you have, the harder it is to catch them.
There were 80 people at Nordstrom. We saw this before. Ooh. We saw this before during the riots last summer in Chicago. I saw it firsthand at the Nordstrom, ironically, on Grand Avenue when I'm driving out to go to work, go to this show. And this was, you know, early hours of the morning, obviously, 4 in the morning. Mm. And you saw dozens upon dozens of people running down the escalator at the Nordstrom downtown with loot in their hands.
And that was over a social media lie that said a black guy was shot by a white cop, which that was not the truth. Remember that? Because they just needed any reason to riot. But now in San Francisco, they just have the law on their side.
And San Francisco DA Chase Abodin is outraged by the mass looting of these luxury stores. He's outraged.
Oh, really?
In less than 24 hours, my office has received 1,000 emails demanding San Francisco defund the police department. This is a guy who supports defunding the police department. That's a previous tweet from last June. Now he's singing a different tune come yesterday. I'm outraged by the looting in Union Square last night. We are seeing similar crimes across the county. I have a simple message. Don't bring that noise to our city. Great work by the San Francisco PD. Stand by for felony charges. Now he's a law and order guy.
Oh, yeah.
His reelection must be around the corner. He must have done some polling recently. He must have seen how the defund the police candidates and ballot initiatives fared a few weeks ago, that first Tuesday after the first Wednesday in November. All these individuals, the Chris Holmes, who, yeah, the bond was too low.
We're investigating. Rest assured, this won't happen again. Yeah, right.
We had a chance for Fox and Cook County. We passed because Illinois never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity. But other communities are doing differently, even left-leaning communities. So we'll see what the future holds for Chisholm and Bowdoin and Krasner in Philadelphia, although Philadelphia took a pass on replacing Krasner too, much like Cook County did. So it's going to be uneven around the country, but it's going to continue to be a national issue, not just because you're seeing these big cities destroyed, not only by the looters, but by the suburbanites who support the big cities who are unwilling to go downtown, and by the flight out of those big cities, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show with Ted Dabrowski from Wire Points. But because of so that's happening in the big cities, but even in the smaller communities, whether it's Rochester, New York, or it's Waukesha. People don't feel safe under the direction of these defund the police, non-prosecution politicians, mayors, city council members, prosecutors. I think there's a change coming. It's just unfortunate it has to be at a cost of so many lives that were needlessly lost, as those five so far over the weekend in Waukesha. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Only the biggest stories. Only the biggest guests. And only the biggest opinions.
Hey, Chicago.
This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Kyle Rittenhouse sat down for an extended interview by Tucker Carlson last evening on Tucker's program. The full hour was devoted to the conversation that Tucker Carlson had with Kyle Rittenhouse. And I thought it was illuminating. One, and I think this was smart, just because this has gotten a lot of media coverage doesn't mean that everybody has a handle on what went down. They haven't paid attention to the trial. They've just perhaps caught bits and pieces of the reporting on the trial. And we know how awful the reporting has been.
Horrible.
From beginning through the trial. So I think it was good to sort of reset what happened and let Kyle describe it in his own words, sort of step by step, why he was there, what happened when he encountered rider number one, Rosenbaum, rider number two, Huber, rider number three, Grosskreutz, and then what he did after he was clear of the rioters and he had gotten to police in Kenosha on that night. I thought that this is important so you have a picture in your mind of what he was experiencing and what his thinking was as he was experiencing it. And this is, again, what informed the jury's understanding of what happened, which is why they acquitted. First, just to, again, reset, even though we've gone over this many times, get it set in your own mind, even those who think they have it set, so that you can inform your ignorant
friends
and neighbors. I had, just as a quick aside, I had this buddy of mine ping me over the weekend. He said, you know, my neighbor, we were over at our neighbor's house, my wife and I, over at the neighbor's house, talking about the verdict. And the guy gets all upset with me, and he tells me to F off, and he, like, walks away.
Oh,
I'm like, well, why can't you just explain what your position is?
Right.
And I try, because he just, I know this guy, he's not, you know, a provocative guy. He just was like, literally, he inquires, explain your position, I want to understand it. And I said, you have to understand, the Rittenhouse case just became a proxy for your political disposition. People don't have to know anything. They just knee-jerk to one side or the other based on political disposition, and they know none of the underlying facts. They have no appreciation for the law. And so they just say, you know, you're a white supremacist if you're with Rittenhouse, or you're a Trump voter if you're with Rittenhouse, and, you know, you're a rioter sympathizer if you're with the prosecution.
No
assessment of the quality of the case that was presented. Nothing. They don't know anything. No. They don't care to know anything.
Dan, they don't even watch the evidence that was presented in court. It was live streamed, so you could watch it. You can even, you know, if you couldn't because you're working during the day, you could take time and get on the internet. Because I had the same conversation on Sunday, first church, and then I had to go to a school fundraiser. And he's like, well, I can't believe the mom drove him there with a loaded gun. And I'm like, that's not what happened. Then you just baby step them through it. There's nothing that's going to change these people's minds, Dan.
Well, that's right. Because
that's the sad part.
They know they're being lied to, and they want to be lied to.
Yeah, just that's like they want to be controlled with masks. They love it. Bring it.
You just have to accept that there's some people that want to be lied to, and they know they're being lied to. It's easier. Isn't it easier? I'm for Rittenhouse being locked away for life because I'm against racism. That's so much easier than having to wade through the details, the complications, to contemplate the law in the context of what actually happened, to spend any time watching the case that the prosecution put on. It's just easier. Just leave me alone to say, this is what the position I've been told to take by the people I'm politically aligned with. They're probably not telling me the truth. I don't care. It's easy for me. I've got the moral high ground. I'm against racism. And that means I'm for Rittenhouse going to prison for life. And that's just the end of it. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
But that's irresponsible because we have politicians that are doing that.
There are people like that. Just first of all, you have to accept that there are people like that. Because I think people don't think these people actually exist. They are like that. They elect people into office who are also like that. Yes. But I just, you know, crystallize that in your mind, that this is a reality on the ground and a big problem for a free society. So first, per your friend who thought, you know, he got carpooled to Kenosha with a full armory.
Yeah, by his mother.
Here's Rittenhouse explaining again why he was in Kenosha.
Well, it actually started on August 24th. I was working my job as a lifeguard at the Recplex in Kenosha County, and then the riots were still going on and a curfew was implied. So I went to Dominic Black's house and I stayed the night over there and saw the videos of the riots and the arson going on.
What'd you think of it?
It was upsetting because Kenosha is my community. And I just was upset seeing my community up in flames.
Yeah.
I stay the night August 24th. We wake up in the morning and we're talking. We're like, let's go help our community. Let's go see what we can do. And we ended up at Ruther Central High School where we were cleaning graffiti for a couple hours. And then we met with the owners of Car Source and we offered to protect their business from fires, making sure the rest of their other two properties didn't get burned down like they did the night prior, and they agreed. We came back. We went back to Dominic's house and hung out there for a little bit, and then we went to Car Source to help protect the property and make sure it didn't set on fire again.
You know, one thing that comes across before we get to then what transpired as he's at Car Source is he's a pretty composed, pretty even-keeled young guy for being 18 years old, 17 at the time, and everything he's gone through. And he's pretty well-spoken. He has a handle on things. So he's at Car Source. And, by the way, the unarmed, he's Kyle Rittenhouse targeting unarmed citizens.
Yeah.
It's not true.
Mm-mm.
Here's what he encountered.
Like, there were rioters with firearms. I remember one very distinctly, Joshua Zeminski was walking around with a pistol in his hand all that night with Joseph Rosenbaum.
Where did you first see Rosenbaum?
The first time I saw Rosenbaum was the first time he threatened to kill me. It was at the corner of the Car Source lot that I was at primarily that night, and I was asking people if they needed medical, and he came up to me and Ryan Balch, and he said, if I catch any of you MFers alone, I'm going to effing kill you.
Had you ever seen him before?
I have not.
So you'd never seen this guy. He walks up and threatens to kill you out of nowhere.
Yes. It was quite shocking. I was like, why would somebody threaten to kill me? I'm just asking if people need help on both sides. I was there just to help anybody that needed, and shockingly, the only people I helped that night were rioters.
What kind of sense did you get from Rosenbaum? I mean, that sounds deranged.
When he threatened to kill me, I was like, what the heck just happened? I've never, nobody's ever threatened to kill me up until that point. And I was like, that's not something you say to somebody.
So Zeminski is another piece of human excrement that is awaiting trial on arson charges. He's another scumbag criminal.
Yeah, because remember,
like the rest of these Clockwork Orange kids who let loose on the city of Kenosha because they were able to. Joseph Rosenbaum, Anthony Huber, Grosskurtz. Zeminski, these are all
professional
criminals.
Yep,
they're scum bags. They are dregs of society, and they're lauded as young men of promise by politicians like Pritzker.
Yeah, and they started a dumpster on fire with the purpose to bring it to a gas station to hopefully blow up the gas station, and that would have caused mass casualties.
So, and the important point about his recitation of Zeminski and Rosenbaum in particular, coming up to him, the prosecutors saying that Rittenhouse was the aggressor. I guess not. So now Rittenhouse on the shooting of Rosenbaum and what happened next.
After I shoot Mr. Rosenbaum, he tried to grab my gun. I was running away. There was a gunshot behind me. After I shoot him, I run around the car because I was going to go render first aid to him. I wasn't able to because then there was a mob forming and calling for my execution to get him and kill him. And that's when I try to run to the police line and get to the police. And then I am attacked again.
He was there to help people, and he didn't render aid to those people he shot, one of the leftist lies about that night. Well, there's your explanation of what actually happened. Couldn't render aid because a mob is forming, and then he's attacked again. Next up, Anthony Huber.
After Jump Kick Man is running off, Anthony Huber comes up and he grabs the barrel of my gun, and then he hits me with his skateboard holding his trucks, and that's when I shoot him one time.
Where did he hit you with the skateboard?
He hit me in the back of the head, in the neck, the back of the head towards the neckline.
Did you think you were going to be killed at that point?
I did.
Next up, Grosskreutz. He runs up, gun pointed at Rittenhouse. Mm-hmm.
And then after Mr. Huber attacks me, Mr. Grosskreutz puts his hands up, and then I have my rifle pointed in his direction for about a second. And then once I lower my rifle, I noticed that my ejection port is opened about an inch, and Mr. Grosskreutz said I pulled the charging handle, which never happened. I hit the forward assist to close the ejection port, and he sees me doing that or something. And this time, he runs at me, and he has his gun pointed directly at my head.
Did you see the gun?
I did.
What, do you think he was going to shoot you?
I did. He had it pointed directly at my head, and that's when I shoot him one time, and he is no longer a threat to me at that point because he ran off after I fired that shot.
Did you realize you'd hit him?
I didn't know until later.
So after all of that, then he makes his way to the police line. And what's the first thing he does? He tries to turn himself in.
Yeah.
He tried to turn himself into Kenosha. They wouldn't accept him in the fog of war. Then he ends up turning himself in to Antioch police. But that's important, too, just in terms of understanding the timeline and the facts. But in terms of understanding his character, the exchange between he and his mom over whether or not to turn himself in or flee.
I didn't call my mom after I saw her, and she was in shock. She was like, she wanted to go into hiding, and I said, no, the right thing to do would be to turn myself in. I didn't do anything wrong.
So you knew that from the very beginning?
I knew that. A lot of people are like, oh, Kyle had time to meet with his attorneys to come up with this amazing defense of self-defense. No, that's not the case. This has been 100% self-defense from the beginning. And I didn't know there was 100 cameras. I knew but I did know I was attacked and I defended myself.
What do you think would have happened to you if there hadn't been the amount of video that there is?
I can't even imagine. I don't think we'd be sitting here right now having this talk, Tucker.
Yeah, it's really the saddest comment, perhaps, that he made during the entire interview, and Tucker Carlson agreed with that. I'm inclined to agree with it, too, that without all that video evidence, most of which was available immediately after that night of rioting, and yet without that, it would have been Kyle's word and circumstantial evidence and eyewitness testimony, and given the mob mentality of the justice system in Kenosha County, at least under this prosecutor Gravely, and that and prosecutors like that Thomas Binger, combined with the outside lying and defaming going on by the assembled DC press corps and the entire leftist cultural elite, you don't think you would have had a conviction? I don't know, maybe a hung jury. Well, because they're locals and they maybe know more and have more sense than all of the enlightened class. But I don't know. It would have been a much different trial, that's for sure.
And the video helped paint the picture of, the mindset of Rosenbaum, because he was going up to people. Remember, we played the audio here on the show saying, shoot me, just shoot me, shoot me, because he was just released from the psych ward because he had a suicide attempt the night before. And he was supposed to get his medication for his bipolar condition, but guess what? The pharmacy was closed because it was burnt down the night before.
Bruce in Waukesha, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Dan, you just kind of stole a little bit of my thunder about the media corrupting, you know, basically a lot of people's minds. And if you just take the scenario that if Kyle Rittenhouse actually had been African-American and the three, you know, people who attacked him were still white, could you only imagine that this trial would have been, you know, tried in the court of public opinion, and they would have been clamoring, you know, for an acquittal throughout the whole process. And I find it just kind of very irritating that either A, people don't even understand the evidence in the case, or B, they just simply look at color, and that's what decides what the outcome is. It has nothing to do with evidence.
Yeah, I wonder in Waukesha, since the man charged with five counts of premeditated murder is black, and the victims in the town is largely white, when does the media start raising the issue of race and or political beliefs as the motives for those murders over the weekend?
I mean, when does that happen? Yeah, you said on
a
social media too that he had a picture of Scott Walker in a Hitler uniform.
Yeah,
and talked about BLM.
Yeah. Yeah, he made some comment about Kyle Rittenhouse's verdict that was not favorable. When does that start? Mary Kay in Western Springs.
Hi, you guys. I have like three things I want to say. Some people have more time and they care to seek the truth, because you have to admit it takes time to read and keep up and find sources. Yeah, so
I mean,
but not everybody will do that.
No, I know. It takes time to be like you know, a free, thinking American or human.
Yeah.
Yeah. It takes time. Right. You can choose to be an uncivilized barbarian. That's true.
Yeah. Well, they do. Right. Most of these.
Right.
You know, right.
I can see
but
your
what
point.
Happens, yeah. But what happens in the world is upsetting and sad, and they don't want to be a part. They don't want to hear that kind of stuff because it's sad and it's tough to take. I mean, Amy, you and I, both, I know we feel that way. My voice starts to shake. I get really upset. I want to scream and cry because it's what happens is so sad. So we know these things, and people just aren't inclined until it affects them, when they lose one of their own, when their neighbor gets killed, or, you know, you're trying to hold your shiz together so you can face the media and say, my baby's gone. You know, I don't know what the answers are. And I listen every day and I try to read and keep an open mind. And like you talk about, Dan, so good for you that you're doing Pilates, because that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You mean pies and lattes?
Yeah. Whatever.
Right.
It's good for you, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it gets you. Yeah.
You should see me in a pair of Lululemons too, Mary Kay.
Something.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, the Amish texter, by the way, when he heard you were into Pilates, he put a sign up that said pies and lattes this way.
The Amish is very cruel.
I know.
John in Bridgeport.
Hey guys, a couple things. One, I thought he had a problem because I thought he went back to Antioch to get the gun and come back and bring it over state lines, which was a false narrative from the get-go.
Yeah.
And I just can't believe how I succumbed to what the media told me on that. Two, Amy, you got to hold Pritzker and Lightfoot's feet to the fire on this one with their stupid statements after the verdict came out.
I did
yesterday.
I mean,
keep Pepper and them on that, because this is ridiculous. The kid is an all-American boy. He's everything. He's a dream of what parents want their kid to be, and I mean that. He's soft-spoken. He's got intestinal fortitude. I want him to date my daughter, for heaven's sake. That's how good
I think
that kid is.
All right, thanks for the
love
call,
connection.
John. You may have to send her to Arizona State, because apparently that's where he wants to finish his college education. We'll get to Amy's interplay with Lori Lightfoot at the top of the next hour, so stay tuned for that.
And Pritzker's in hiding, by the way.
That's a lot to hide. Mike in Littleton, Colorado.
Yeah, I just heard the lady say that, you know, nobody has the time to look things up. I think our deficit is courage and maybe a little bit of ambition. It's easy to be lazy, and it's easy to be a coward, and we have both, I think, in very high quantity, certainly on the other side of that fence. And if I may, just real quickly, you know, if I started spreading a rumor around my neighborhood that, you know, the neighbor of my neighbor was having an affair while her husband was gone, and I turned the whole community against, you know, that guy, and then the scorned husband comes home and shoots the other guy, am I not culpable for something? I mean, when does all this lying end? Is there got to be some legal mechanism? So if you could help me answer that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Mm. It's an interesting question. I mean, certainly there are situations like that where you play a prank on somebody, for example, and the person doesn't realize it's a prank, and then somebody's hurt or worse. We've seen these horrible stories to that effect. You know, media culpability, like criminal culpability, beyond defamation. Mm. It's a very high bar for all kinds of good reasons. But I think it is a conversation at some point. You really have to be part of a conspiracy to purposely mislead, and you have to reasonably know that this conspiracy of lies will lead to an injury or death in order to be criminally liable. But that doesn't, but members of the media are held to the same legal standard that citizens are. You wouldn't indict necessarily, say, the New York Times, but you could indict a New York Times reporter, for example. In this hypothetical, if they ran afoul of that provision in the law. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility, and even just talking about it maybe will have a chilling effect on those that are right up against that line in the D.C. press corps, and there seem to be many. Frank in St. Charles.
Hey, good morning. Amy, I have a question. You have a couple boys. If you had a 17-year-old son and there was a riot, would you let him go there with his rifle?
I do have a 17-year-old son who just turned 18, so no, I would not let them go. But
there you go.
Yeah.
But you know what, Frank? That's not – he was there because I understand why he was there, and I support why he was there. Personal choice? No, I wouldn't want my kids to do that.
First of all –
Because they're not – because my kids don't know how to shoot rifles yet. They can do – I'm not – they're not equipped. I just wouldn't want them to go.
And so, what's your point?
Disaster.
Yeah, what's your point, Frank?
The point is, he was there almost in a provoking way and provoked the situation. He's a young punk with a gun.
So he's guilty.
Come on.
So he's guilty,
Frank.
He might have skated on the self-defense thing, but it was a really bad, stupid decision to go there with a gun. I would never allow my kid to do that, no matter how good of a shot he was.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Yeah, I understand that perspective because you don't want your kids in harm's way.
Well, the governor should have had the National Guard there so that people didn't have to defend other people's properties.
Yeah, but he didn't.
Right.
And so there you go. So a friend asked if they would help protect this guy's car lot after two other car lots have been burned. I don't know. I think it's a little bit more complicated. He didn't go of his own volition because he was, joy hunting. This wasn't a thrill ride for Kyle Rittenhouse. You heard the description of how he came to be in Kenosha. And so... Yeah, right. You want to keep your kids out of harm's way, so you would never want your kid in a theater of war. You wouldn't want your kid in the middle of a riot, potentially with, the threat of bodily harm or worse, a present. On the other hand, who stands up when civilian authorities back down? Frank. Oh, and by the way, that assumes that, every parent has perfect control over their 17 or 18-year-old kid, too. Like Kyle Rittenhouse could have easily been stopped. Every household situation is a little bit different. Every parent-son relationship is a little bit different. But the larger question is, when the civilian authorities fail, when they stand down, who steps up to protect the law-abiding? Frank in St. Charles. Why don't you contemplate that, too, while you're passing judgment?
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We left off last hour going over Tucker Carlson's interview of Kyle Rittenhouse last night, in which the first part of the interview, he had Rittenhouse methodically lay out the timeline and the details that Rittenhouse provided from his presence in Kenosha to everything that transpired that night to what he did once he reached police after the confrontations with the rioters. Every detail answered and gave lie to all of the specious claims made by the D.C. press corps and the intellectually undead that just repeat whatever they say and have been doing so for the last year. It was really key. And among the intellectually undead, of course, are the political leaders of Illinois, both the governor, Spalding, and the mayor, Triple Threat, mayor of Chicago. And as we were talking about last hour, it won't matter to them. They won't change their tune. They'll double down. And so those who, again, have no firing synapses will double down as well, because these cases are not interesting to them in terms of nuance, facts, context, the law. They're only interesting as the means by which they can preen before each other and say, I'm against racism. I'm for Kyle Rittenhouse spending his life in prison.
Yeah.
The judge fixed the case.
Right. The judge.
And so on and so forth. It was racism in Kenosha. There's going to be the usual litany of cover stories. And what are those stories covering? Their own ignorance, their own inability, yep, and lack of desire to critically think.
But I expected, I don't know why I'm so stupid. I expected Mayor Lightfoot's an attorney. Pritzker's an attorney. But Mayor Lightfoot, you know, her tweet out right after the verdict, what Kyle Rittenhouse did was reckless, dangerous, and showed an utter disregard for human life. And then she went on to say our thoughts and prayers are with Jacob Blake. So I asked her,
do you really think that his acquittal on all charges is a warning shot that vigilante justice is now allowed? And did you watch the videos that were presented in the courtroom?
And she's lying here.
I've seen a number of the videos in connection with that case. Look, here's what I think. Obviously, a jury heard evidence and rendered a verdict. I also watched what the judge did in shaping the evidence that was getting presented to that jury. You know, I'm an old trial lawyer,
right,
and I know when I see a judge putting their thumb on the scale for a particular result. I was not at all surprised.
What in particular did he do?
The excluding of evidence, not allowing the deceased to be called victims, not letting certain charges go to the jury.
312-642-5600, turnkey Depro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And shame on me for shame on me for not stopping. But they take the microphone away from you, so you can't say,
okay.
Hey,
so
what videos did you watch? What in particular? Yeah. Did you see Rosenbaum chase him?
Also, what evidence was excluded that shouldn't have been?
Right.
And why? Break it down for us, old trial lawyer.
Well, she went on to say the judge misled the jury, Dan.
But they're looking for cues, not just from the prosecutor and the defense attorney. They look for cues from the judge. And that's why it's so important when you are a trial judge in any case, but particularly something as sensitive as this, you got to call balls and strikes. You got to be very even-handed. And you can't afford to send messages, whether intentionally or otherwise, to the jury that you have a particular point of view.
What point of view did he have?
I want to hear from the Kenosha District Attorney's Office if they agree with Lightfoot. That's the next question that should be asked. So are you going to file an appeal for a retrial based on the improper conduct of that judge? Did the prosecution at any time call for the judge to recuse himself? Are they seeking any sanction against that judge before the violations of his duties that Lightfoot is describing?
But she didn't even...
Or is she just looking for her own cover story? Because she's a political hack.
Doesn't even know the facts.
I've never seen in 30-plus trials that I did as a prosecutor and several more as a defense attorney, I never saw a circumstance where the defendant got to pull names out of a hat of who the jurors were going to be that were deciding his fate. I've never seen anything like that before.
That Judge Schroeder has been doing that for years. This was not new. This wasn't theater. That's what this judge does, and he's been there for, 40 years? 35, 40 years? That's what he does.
Uh-huh.
But it's not what you do in Illinois, so that's why she's a little freaked out.
I'm still also contemplating that question I posed to Frank in St. Charles last hour. Because one of the saws of the left is he shouldn't have been there in the first place. Would you send your 17-year-old there? As if he was dispatched by his mom.
That's what Lightfoot said yesterday, too. Why would he be there? Why would a child be there?
He explained why he was there.
Yeah, he did.
So what do you do when civilian authorities stand down and somebody needs to stand up to protect against a real threat? What do you do? What should you do? You know, we've seen this throughout COVID, too. It's now, this oftentimes is at the behest of their parents, so it's really a proxy for their parents. But we've seen kids step up, you know, addressing their school boards where right. parents won't. We've seen kids protest where the adults won't. So if the adults won't act in furtherance of common sense, then why is it so unthinkable that a young person would? Yeah, I understand that I wouldn't put my kids in harm's way. Nobody wants their kid put in harm's way. I'm sure Mrs. Rittenhouse didn't want Kyle put in harm's way either.
She said that too.
So I'm sure he didn't anticipate what he ultimately had to confront. He said that as well. So is Mark Richards, his lawyer, in conversations with Kyle, relaying those conversations with Kyle. But it's an easy thing to say, and then it's a difficult thing to say convincingly when, for example, your town is being laid siege to by a bunch of career criminals,
mm-hmm.
as what was happening in Kenosha.
Out-of-towners, 74% arrested were from out-of-town.
So then what do you do in that circumstance? That's what I'd like to know from those who think it's so easy from, you know, their perches to suggest what should never happen. Well, there's a lot of things that should never happen that come to pass. And when those things that should never happen happen, how do you respond?
One more thing Lightfoot said, you know, she had attacked the right wingers.
These right wing, frankly, unhinged members of Congress offering an internship to Kyle Rittenhouse. I mean, what is that? A lot of other groups that, frankly, in my view, are anti-American, anti-democracy, using this as a rallying cry. Yeah, I'm very concerned about what that verdict does.
All right,
now,
of her demagoguery.
Again, you've got to respect the
nonsense.
Well, she went on to say, you know, if I'd seen the evidence,
whatever.
I might have come to a different result. Well, yeah, you just admit it. You didn't see all the evidence, lady.
Hey, this town.
I know, this town, yeah. And the state.
Phil in South Holland.
Yeah, civilian on patrol. That's the acronym for COP. And the civilians on patrol were not doing their job. They hired civilians on patrol. So another civilian on patrol had to take over. And also, innocent until proven guilty, Mayor Lightfoot. Not guilty of being white, but innocent of being a civilian on a patrol who took over the job of the hired.
All right, thanks for the call, Phil. Frank in Tinley Park.
My take was those two lawyers that the kid had first, he kind of said they didn't do their job. They're going to be suing him when he gets loaded.
Yeah, that was an interesting part of the interview yesterday.
Thanks. Lynn Wood and John Pierce are going to sue Kyle Rittenhouse. Go ahead and sue him.
He stayed in jail for 87 days when they had the bond money and they wouldn't let him out because they said it's safer for you to be in jail.
Yeah, here's Rittenhouse on his first two lawyers, Lynn Wood, who, I mean, I don't know what happened to that guy. So he does this wonderful defense of Richard Jewell against the wrongfully accused Olympics bomber, Richard Jewell, you know, the movie that Clint Eastwood made out a couple years ago. And then he represents Nick Sandman. And then he loses his mind, apparently, between his unhinged antics during the post-election phase last year, 2020, of election outcome challenges, and this handling of Rittenhouse. Here's Rittenhouse on those two.
Was raising money on my behalf, and he held me in jail for 87 days, disrespected my wishes, put me on media interviews, which I should never have done, which he said, oh, you're going to go talk to the Washington Post, which was not a good idea, along with John Pierce. They said I was safer in jail instead of at home with my family. And then after I'm billed.
Your lawyer said that.
My lawyer said that. Yes. John Pierce and Lynn Wood.
87 days is a long time to be in jail.
It was very long. I lost a lot of weight in there. I since then gained it back.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. But 87 days of not being with my family for defending myself and being taken advantage to, being used for a cause by John Pierce and Lynn Wood, trying to raise money so they can take it for their own benefit, not trying to set me free.
So you think they could have raised the money for bail faster, but they didn't?
Sometime in September, September 5th, I want to say, they had over $1 million, and bail was set and able to be posted in September. So they could have had me sign the waiver for extradition and had me back in Wisconsin, and I could have been bailed out by mid-September. But they wanted to keep me in jail until November 20th.
What was that like?
It was scary in jail.
Lynn Wood and John Pierce want to sue Kyle Rittenhouse. Based on that account, they'd be lucky if Rittenhouse doesn't come after their law licenses.
He should.
Yeah. And by the way, the whole we'll hear more from Rittenhouse on being used for a cause and from his attorney, Mark Richards. But yeah, I said this yesterday. The whole Madison Cawthorn, Matt Gaetz, Paul Gosar talking about, you know, you can have an internship in our office and so. Yeah.
Goofy.
You know, it doesn't seem like he wants to be part of any cause. He didn't from the beginning. He doesn't now. So leave him alone. Stop trying to draft off of, you know, this celebrity that he enjoys now, particularly if he eschews it, which I hope he does for his own.
And he said
his own future.
Then he's going to lay low for a while.
There's one thing I agree with that pathetic little person, and I mean little in the sense of character, that pathetic little person who is the mayor of Chicago. Yeah, right. But she has nothing to say about Kyle Rittenhouse being defamed by Biden as a white supremacist, all of her fellow travelers, unhinged as they are and continue to be. Spare me. Ignacio in Spring Grove.
Hey, good morning, guys. First of all, I appreciate you guys a lot. It's easy to listen to things when it comes from you guys. I want to hit this guy from St. Charles who's a simpleton, and I don't mean it as an insult as much as I say it as a judgment. He would have the same logic, I guess, based on what he's saying, that if a woman got raped, it's her fault because she was dressed provocatively. These guys are not thinking clearly, and as far as race goes, the race issue drives me crazy because the only person who didn't get shot who attacked Kyle Rittenhouse was black. But we don't hear anything about that.
All right. Thanks for the call. Janine on the South Side.
Good morning, guys. I just wanted to add a comment. You know, Heather McDonald said a while back, you know, things are going to hit the fan when crime ends up on these, you know, coddled suburban family, you know, especially these women in the suburbs, these uppity, like that Mary, the social media director of DuPage County, who made the comment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this crime is coming here. And, you know, these women are anti-Second Amendment. They're against protecting yourself. You know, what if one of her kids was involved in that catastrophe in Wisconsin? One of her kids was killed or one of her family members? You know, we're seeing a dramatic increase in crime. And the police are being told to stand down, and this is not going to get better. You know, and it's when the reality is it affects your family, it affects your kids. That's when I don't know what it's going to take to wake these people up.
I know. Thanks. And Mary's out of her job now. But I mean, the fact that someone who believes in reaping what you sow, Wisconsin put that bad energy out there. It came back real fast. Oh, guess what, Dan? She has a hate has no home sign in front of her house.
Of course she
does.
Just
so you know. And she's out of a job.
The worst people in the world.
Worst.
The worst people in the world. White, leftist, female, suburbanites, as well as the women they marry, like that Arnie Duncan chick who married Lightfoot. Richard in Blue Island.
Yeah. Hey, guys. That case never should have been brought against Rittenhouse. So Prosecutor Binger was given the middle finger.
Oh, I see what you did. Thanks there. You're right. Richard.
Yeah. And by the way, just in terms of some things, what next on the legal front? He had this on the question of whether or not he'll pursue defamation against the President of the United States and others.
I have really good lawyers who are taking care of that right now. So I'm hoping one day there will be accountability for their actions that they did.
Okay. So you're intent on not, you're not going to let that go.
Like I said, really good lawyers are handling that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're working on it.
He did a really good job, Rittenhouse did. He was very poised and, I don't know.
I like
he's likable.
I like the Babylon Bee story on the topic. Rittenhouse and Sandman agree to share custody of CNN.
Do they get each other every other weekend, too?
Yeah.
And split the holidays? Oh, God, that's great. That's really good.
I don't know. I don't know
we
if
needed
I'd want
a laugh.
To chaperone Jeff Zucker. He also had a message for the said president. By the way, remember, Joe Biden made these comments before he was president. So the protections that a president enjoys to civil litigation do not apply, as we saw, for example, in the Paula Jones case against Bill Clinton. So he does have exposure, does candidate Biden for the things that he said.
Good.
And here's what Rittenhouse has to say to that man.
Mr. President, if I could say one thing to you, I would urge you to go back and watch the trial and understand the facts before you make a statement.
That's not a small thing to be called that.
No, it's actual malice, defaming my character for him to say something like that.
What, I mean, why do you think, and it's not simply Biden who said that, it's a lot of people on television have said that, a lot, dozens of people have said that, sorry to tell you in case you haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's actually quite hysterical how nobody can go back and look at the facts of the case. He crossed state lines, false. He's a white supremacist, false. None of that is true. And the lies that they can just get away with spreading is just sickening, and it's a disgrace to this country.
Sounds like a Rittenhouse is doing a little bit of brushing up on the law, or
when
he was in the can, or maybe just through osmosis from his attorneys. Actual malice, that's the standard for a public figure. He knows what the standard he has to clear is to pursue a defamation case. Sounds like
great.
They're prepping. Chuck and Delavan.
Hey, he was found not guilty, and that means that an angry mob cannot single a person out and go and kill them. If he would have been found guilty, that would have meant that if I was by an angry mob and said something and they came after me and I couldn't outrun them, I, by law, would be obligated to let them kill me. That's how insane this is. It's real simple. It's not a hard thing to figure out. I want to know when the police officers are going to be able to take and protect themselves. The ones that the Columbus Day thing where 18 of them went, if they would have known that they could have took and protected themselves, why should they have not have the same rights as Kyle Rittenhouse just because they're a police officer? I think this whole thing turned around really bad on these Black Lives Matter people. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Chuck. Yeah, this whole the prosecution's contention that sometimes you just have to sit there and take a beating, essentially, is what they argued. Not particularly compelling. I don't think you're going to find a lot of popular support for that position.
And real quick, we just got a text message in on the DA text line that says, what about Governor Pritzker? Where's his response? He has not had any, ever since he walked with Mickey Mouse down the Mag Mile for the Lights Parade, no one's seen him, and he's not having any press conference this week.
Yeah, he's hiding out in the Dumbo suit he got for that performance. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy continuing our discussion about the Kyle Rittenhouse case. Against the backdrop of his extended interview with Tucker Carlson last night. And, of course, ultimately, we got to the question of what's next for Kyle Rittenhouse. Let's talk prospectively. This is in the rearview mirror. There are lessons to be taken from it, but also interested in what lessons he takes away from it in terms of what he plans to do with the rest of his life. First, his attorney, Mark Richard, was on with Martha McCallum yesterday. She was asked that same question, what his advice is, has or has been to Kyle. And this is what Mark Richard said.
My advice would be to change his name and start his life over. He's very recognizable right now. There's a lot of people who I don't think have his best interests at heart and probably want to make him a symbol of something I don't think he wants to be necessarily associated with. And once you give up your name and your likeness and you join those causes, I think a lot of people will use you for their own purposes and you won't be able to control it. We've had that talk with Kyle, and it's going to be a fine line where he decides to go. Ultimately, I hope he makes the right choices. You know, I would think his life would be a lot easier being anonymous and going on with his life, as opposed to try and keep some of his fervent supporters happy.
Yeah.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. What would you have for, what advice would you have for young Kyle Rittenhouse?
I'd say take the Steve Bartman route and just lay low like J-Lo and go on with your life and just, because he's going to be bombarded with interview requests from now until the end of time. And people know who Steve Bartman is, right, Dan? We don't
I
have to tell them.
I believe in Chicago. I hope they would, yes.
Yes, he's the one who they claim that, you know, cost the Chicago Cubs the World Series back in 2003. I believe that was
yes,
it.
Yes, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, well, some people might not know. And so he has just gone on with his life. He moved out of town for a little bit, but he's back here in the suburbs, and he just doesn't engage.
Mark Richard, he should change his name. Well, first of all, let me just reject a premise. One is, his life would be a lot easier. Who said anything about life being easy?
Life is not easy.
Who said it should be?
Doesn't matter what your name is. Life is never easy.
Change his name. Why should he change his name? The prosecutor should change their names.
Bingo. Like the way you think. 312-642-5600.
Kyle Rittenhouse doesn't have anything to be ashamed of. There's a lot of other people that do. The governor of Wisconsin should change his name. The DA in Kenosha County should change his name.
The DA of Milwaukee County should change his name.
Right, unrelated matter.
Unrelated, but still.
Why should he change his name out of and capitulate to this mad culture? He should do the opposite.
Yeah, it's your God-given name at birth that your parents gave you. You don't change your name.
Here's what Kyle Rittenhouse said on what's next for him.
I'm hoping I can live a quiet, stress-free life and be free of any intimidation or harassment and just go on with my life as a normal 18-year-old kid attending college.
So you're going to go to college?
I am in college. I'm a student at Arizona State University.
What I mean, are you going to go to campus? And
I think I am. I want to. It's a lot of things we have to look into, so I don't know for sure yet. But I do intend on going in campus and pursuing a career in nursing. I may change it. I've been looking into law. I may want to become a lawyer. Oh. I haven't completely decided yet. But I've been looking. I want to be a nurse, so I've been doing the prerequisites for that.
Interesting.
You know, Kyle should do whatever he's comfortable doing, but I do appreciate some of what he had to say after that, or as they were talking about next steps for Kyle, what he had to say about his experience, and because he has a platform to comment on these things, and probably he's not out of the public eye yet if he does pursue defamation cases, which it sounds like he is preparing to pursue. And some comments he made, and again, this doesn't have to be partisan. I'm not suggesting he go be an intern for any Republican's congressional office, or that he become a TV host, or he become a, you know, one of these
Newsmax correspondent. Somebody said, these, I mean, give me a break.
One of these know-nothings who write books before they've ever read a book on these panel discussions, including on Fox. I'm not suggesting he do any of that, but I do appreciate from his lived experience, as the left would say, comments like the following.
And apparently a lot of people on the left, it's criminal to want to protect your community. I'm at a place now to where I have to have people with me because people want to kill me just because I defended myself, and they're too ignorant to look at the facts of what happened.
Do you feel the threats?
I do. I see some of the threats. Some of the things people say, it's absolutely sickening.
Are you confident that the government will protect you from these threats? Because that's, of course, the government's job.
I hope so, but we all know how the FBI works.
The FBI is a punchline. The left believes it's criminal to protect your community. He's absolutely right on both of those scores.
So spot on.
Can't be said enough. So forget talking about this in a Republican-Democrat context, any particular candidates on either side. Just talk about the criminal justice system. Talk about law enforcement. Talk about prosecutorial misconduct. Talk about this poisonous mentality that afflicts, you know, something approximating half of America, believing it's criminal to protect your community.
I just hope he could be safe.
Now, in terms of where he might land, his instincts are good, I got to tell you that.
Before this, I actually wanted to move to Naples, Florida.
Oh.
And then this happened. But I don't know where I'm going to go. I'm going to go lay low and live my life and enjoy it.
Well, maybe it could be your roommate, Dan.
There's a slot open in our neighborhood watch, Kyle. So you're welcome in Vanderbilt Beach anytime. Chad on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Yeah, I think Kyle needs to push back. We see here the media, they are the enemy in this country. And I think some of his handlers appear to be grifters. This Hancock guy, I'm very suspicious of him. We all know that Lynn Wood is apparently insane.
Well, he's out of the picture.
Yeah, he's out of this. But, I mean, the legal system, too. I mean, this kid needs to go out and show the people this legal system, this banger guy. I mean, obviously, he wasn't the best prosecutor on the bench there up in Waukesha. Probably the other guys didn't want to take it. Because really the video evidence is what got this kid off, if you followed the trial.
Tell Mayor Lightfoot that.
Yeah, well, she's a clown, too. But, hey, on the South Side, we like to quote Voltaire. Let me leave you with this on lawsuits. I was never ruined but twice, once when I lost a lawsuit and once when I won one. There you go.
Chet, yes, Voltaire, very popular at Cork and Kerry. I know, often cited. Okay, Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. First thing he needs to do, concealed carry permit and walking around packing all the time. And after he wins, I don't know, $30, $50, $100 million and all these defamation suits he's going to have coming up, just needs to move to the mountains, not Naples, Florida, Dan. He needs to move to the mountains, buy a ranch in Montana or something, and live the good life.
All right.
Guys, have a good one.
It's not terrible in Naples.
I know, Greg. I sound like a mom, but I think the mob and those people that hate him are going to follow him wherever he goes, especially to Arizona State.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, it's, you know, he's recognizable whether he goes under a pseudonym or not, at least for the foreseeable future. So he's going to have to decide how he wants to live. How would you? That's an interesting question.
Yeah,
how would you live if you were Kyle Rittenhouse? Forget it. I mean, part of it is giving advice to him is essentially projecting onto him what you would do. But be specific. What would you do if you were Kyle Rittenhouse? Would you change your name?
Oh,
would you go low key? What would you do? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line.
What would you do, Dan? I know you wouldn't change your name. I would never change my name or allow my kid to change their name.
Would you
move to Naples?
Yeah. Yeah. That's been done.
Would you get a concealed carry? Oh, wait.
That's also been done. Yeah, no, I would. I mean, if it was me, I'd lean into it, but I'm a lot more political than Kyle is. But right. If it was me, yeah, I would lean into it. Come, bring your worst. Bring it. All of it. Your criminals who pretend to be affirming black lives. Bring your media. Bring your thugs. Bring your hysterical white leftist suburban women. Bring them all. Park the parade of horribles in front of my house. That's what I would say. Philip and Skokie.
Yeah, they
they would base this kid is under serious threat of bodily harm and ostracization. I think he'd be a lot better off having $200 million in his pocket to protect himself and provide security and gatekeepers in terms of access to him.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the call, Philip. Well, maybe he can get something approximating that from the Joe Biden estate combined with various
Biden
media outlets. Yeah. I'd hate to see him take away Hunter's inheritance, but mm-hmm. Ed and Morris. Hey, Ed. Ed and Morris.
Yeah, hello.
You're on, Ed.
Yeah, I want to know what are these public guys getting? They left hanging low fruit. They left the guy who kicked them in the head assault, and they left last shooter or attempted shooter. He was a felon with a gun, concealed carry. I mean, they had so much on him, and they didn't go after him at all. They went after Kyle, the basically good kid.
Thanks for the call, Ed. Yeah, you know, that Kaminsky that was mentioned by Kyle and was mentioned at trial, but the prosecution never called him as a witness because he's another career scumbag.
Right. And why didn't they charge them?
Well, Kaminsky is facing charges.
Okay, good.
But he also, when he and Rosenbaum rolled up on Rittenhouse, Rosenbaum threatened him. He was unarmed. Kaminsky had a weapon. He fired a warning, quote unquote, warning shot in the air, confirmed by Kaminsky's girlfriend. So that's who you were dealing with all night, if you're Kyle Rittenhouse. They bringing it to him right from the start. George in Will County.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Thank you for taking the call. Yeah, he should not change his name. He should continue to press forward. Honestly, file some ARDCs against his so-called, first crew, and also look at, filing complaints with the FCC with the so-called media outlets because they're no longer the press. They put out false information. They withheld a lot of information from the American people, and one of the avenues for retribution on this would be filing those complaints and make them justify their license to the press.
Thanks for the call, George. Rich in Indian Head Park. Hey, Rich.
Rich.
All right. Clay in Wheeling.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. If I was Kyle Rittenhouse, I'd sue every mother loving one of them. But you know what? I completely understand if that kid just wants to get away and does not want to see anybody ever again. I completely understand that. And up on the north side, we quote Chevy Chase, a flute with no holes is not a flute. A donut with no holes is a Danish. Have a great day, guys.
It's so true. It's so true, Clay. It's very, yes, very, very good. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Counselor, are you there?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Counselor. Is that you? Are you there? That, of course, was Max Katie from Cape Fear.
There
at the end. Yeah, you know.
So you want Kyle Rittenhouse? Wait. You want Kyle Rittenhouse to go full Cape Fear on Thomas Bingham?
No. But we have some really horrible lawyers like Mayor Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker who evidently don't know that every person who's accused of a crime is deserved to be zealously defended. By, yeah, of course, those politicians don't believe in the Magna Carta, which goes back to 1215 AD. So, I guess we shouldn't be surprised at the comments of our political leaders.
Frank, I know you teach. Maybe Summerstock or some other acting outlet in your future. What do you think? Second City.
To pay my property tax.
Right. Thanks, Frank. That's as good a Max Cady as De Niro offer, that's for sure. Good. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Mike Manapkin runs the Democratic House for 30-plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when you're moving out.
Dan and Amy, that theme music means it's time for our weekly conversation with Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints, wirepoints.org. But before we get to Ted, talking about the criminal justice system in the context of the massacre at the Christmas parade in Waukesha, where the dude who's been charged with five counts of premeditated murder had been bonded out for $1,000, habitual criminal, repeat offender, bonded out for $1,000 after attempting to run over the mother of one of his children with his car.
Yeah, and that happened November 2nd, I believe.
And he was bonded, $1,000 bond on Friday, the Friday before the Sunday massacre.
And so, it is a massacre, by the way.
Chris Holm, the DA in Milwaukee County, bond was unusually low.
Yeah, now they're looking into it, Dan.
The prosecutorial decisions in the Rittenhouse case, Chesa Boudin in San Francisco, all of a sudden realizing that these mobs attacking high-profile retail stores, that's a problem, as he's given over the streets of San Francisco to the mob, the same way that Lightfoot and Fox have given over the streets to the mob, to the predators in Chicago and Cook County. And this against the backdrop of election results 3 weeks ago, that suggests defund the police, not real popular, even in blue states like Minnesota, blue cities like Minneapolis. You think this in any way chastens the defund the police and defund the prisons left? If you think that, you'd be wrong. Let me present some evidence, recent. MF'er Spice, you know her as Rashida Tlaib of the Socialist Spice Girls Caucus in the House Democrat Socialist Caucus. She sat down for an interview with Jonathan Swan from Axios to talk about her support for the BREATHE Act. BREATHE Act, of course, in the wake of the George Floyd killing. The BREATHE Act would close all federal prisons over the course of the 10 years following its enactment. Close all federal prisons.
What?
We've talked about it before. It's not moving. It's not going to move. But that's what they believe. And so one wonders, well, why? Here's Tlaib.
Any potential downsides of releasing into society every single person who's currently in a federal prison?
Yeah, I think that everyone's like, oh my God, we're going to just release everybody.
That's not what the act says.
But did you see how many people are mentally ill that are in prison right now?
No, I know, but the act that you says release everyone.
But
in 10 years,
but think about it, who will release?
But there are like human traffickers.
Oh, I know.
Child sex. Do you mean that you don't actually support that?
No.
Because you endorse the bill.
No, I endorse the BREATHE Act and looking at federal the policies and how we incarcerate. Absolutely.
But it says in there.
But you cannot just blankly say, oh, look, she wants. That's not what I'm saying.
But that's like in plain text.
But
it?
What I'm saying is look at who's in prison now. No, look at the folks that are mentally ill, that have substance abuse problems.
But I'm not disagreeing with you that there are people who shouldn't be
in prison.
Yeah, but
then why aren't you asking me about them? You're asking me about the human traffickers and others that should
be able to be held accountable. What I'm trying to understand is your proposal is so sweeping. It does release everyone. And what I'm trying to say to you
within 10 years, and obviously there's a process of looking at how can we get away from mass incarceration and move towards care.
What do you think about that idea? Release everybody in federal prison over the next 10 years and trust Rashida Tlaib and her Socialist Spice Girl gal pals to determine, you know, who maybe should be released outright and who maybe should be confined to some other facility. But again, the indictment is mass incarceration. The indictment is that people in prison are mentally ill and so they need treatment post or pre. You know, they need care pre so they don't end up in prison. The reason they're in prison is because we didn't provide the care in the first place. And now that they're there, we need to provide the care subsequently. I mean, there are people, you know, like Jeff Fort and mass murderers in federal prisons, right? Federal prison is where you go to do real time.
Right. Violent drug offenders.
But that's the perspective. That's legislation that animates the Democrat socialists, including the Democrat socialists in the Illinois delegation.
So they want to free serial killers, too, because a lot of them are there.
She certainly wasn't making the distinctions that Jonathan Swan, the reporter for Axios, was trying to get her to make, which is instructive. And the attitude of that congressperson from Michigan and the entire power structure in Illinois and Chicago gives you this story from the Tribune, no less. Shocking that they've actually picked up on this. It only took them a decade. As the black population continues to drop in Chicago and Illinois, few regret their mood, their move, I should say, or their new mood. 5 years after leaving South Shore, Jason and Jennifer Parks are convinced the decision to move their family to Northwest Indiana was the right one. Mm-hmm. Northwest Indiana, isn't that white racists?
Right.
As Chicago continues to struggle to contain violence, the Parkses said they appreciate the town of St. John's at a slower pace.
Oh,
the four-bedroom home they built on a wide lot in Lake County, Indiana, provides space, security, and the community kinship they were searching for. Community kinship? There's white people in St. John. The family is among thousands of Black Hook County residents who left the city for other states during the past decade. The reverse migration out of Chicago has lowered the city's black population by 10% in the last decade. Chicago's black population, now under 800,000, lowest total since the mid-1950s. Now, the Parkses appreciate the active parents at the local schools where their 15-year-old twin daughters are thriving and have part-time jobs after school. But wait a second, they're black and St. John is mostly white.
How is that possible, Dan? No.
Oh, so there it is. All of the black race hustlers in office and, you know, the shakedown artists like the Jackson family in Chicago. They've served black families in Chicago, in Cook County, and Illinois so well. Don't ever change. It's just the smart ones who can leave. For more on all this, now we bring in our friend Ted Dabrowski, WirePoints.com. Ted, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
How about that? Black families in traditionally black neighborhoods where the black middle class once upon a time thrived in Chicago, they're leaving for lily white Northwest Indiana. What is going on, Ted? The Chicago Tribune wants to understand.
They're surprised, right? Well, you know, this is something we've been harping on at WirePoints, and it's one of the first things I hit on when I came back to Illinois back in 2007, is that I was doing the reverse of what people were doing. One of the first things I did when I got back to Illinois was a review of all the IRS data that said where people were moving to and where they're moving from. And Illinois was then already one of the biggest losers. And it's not surprising, especially, you know, and it used to be that we thought, well, you know, only the rich people can leave. The poor people can't, the ones that, you know, are kind of stuck, especially those in the South Side. Well, you know, the recent data has shown that a lot of them are leaving. Just, you know, anybody who is, you know, in the South Side or in Chicago, who's black, middle class, lower income, they can move. And you know, we've met some of them. I interviewed one in Atlanta who did my haircut and said she got out of Illinois because it just wasn't working for her. She was an African-American entrepreneur. To me, it's not surprising because if you look at the crime, if you look at the schools, if you look at the taxes, if you look at the corruption, you know, just add it up and you're giving people a reason to leave. And you know, I always say that people aren't stupid. They can be bamboozled for a long time by the press and by the politicians, but they're not stupid. They figure it out after a while.
I mean, I was driving through Dalton and Harvey, that whole area, the Southland, last weekend for some reason. Oh, anyway, and that's not sustainable. I mean, people, there's houses that are abandoned, and their police departments look like there's weeds growing that they haven't mowed the lawn, they haven't done anything, and I just don't know how long. I mean, what's going to happen if their police departments fold? Will
Amy,
County
I think it's one of the,
take over?
Yeah, it's one of the biggest, I think, you know, secrets in the country is how messed up that area has become. And I've gone down there several times and spent some time down in Harvey. And you know, I've been through Detroit right after the bankruptcy and drove around. And there are areas in Harvey that look like that, where you just got raised lots, you got burned out houses side by side, and nobody cares. And this is why people like the one that Dan's talking about move to Indiana, where they can actually have things like school choice, bigger homes, bigger yards, lower property taxes, and not be treated like you're some, you know, I don't know, not treated badly like a lot of the politicians treat Illinoisans and Chicagoans.
Right, and it's a reminder that we fall into the rhetoric of the identitarian left talking about people based on their race as if they're monolithic, rather than the Parkses, the Parks family, they're an individual family from the South Shore that now living in St. John. They made a decision about their family, not about the great race war that Nicole Hannah-Jones and the 1619 Hustlers want us to wage. The problem, it seems, is, and they recognize it, the Parks family clearly does, is that this doesn't make sense for us to be here. And what they see around them is probably the same thing I see around, that you see around, is a bunch of people that are essentially wards of the state, disproportionately minorities, just the facts in Chicago. And there's just no change on the horizon. So with no prospect for a better future, we better go find a better future elsewhere.
Well, you know, that's precisely what we've written about so much at Wirepoints. And we actually wrote about that yesterday with related but not the same topic is, you know, Kiplinger came out, the finance company, the personal finance company, and said that, you know, watch out, you know, look at your taxes before you move somewhere, figure out, you know, where you're going to spend thousands more. And Illinois was the least tax-friendly state in the country for middle-class families. You know, it doesn't matter if you're black or white, right? It's the worst state in the country for that. So it's another reason why people leave. And so, you know, you just keep adding all that stuff up. But Dan, I want to just tie back to your comments and, you know, some of the stories you were telling in earlier today is that, you know, what you're hearing from Lightfoot, from Pritzker, from others are just, you know, these untruths that they keep spewing. And you know, they'll continue to push people out because, you know, as they get crazier and crazier, and they're, you know, I hate to say people lie all the time, but that's what they start to sound like. They're just lies. And it's going to keep chasing people out because they're not going to believe anything that's said by these people. And you know, I think the worst one is the one where, you know, Lightfoot is talking about things devolving into chaos when she was the one that watched Chicago burn during the riots. She has no standing to say what she's saying. And so, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're black or white or Hispanic. You're hearing these things, and they're getting their comments are getting crazier. What the Spice Girl's saying there is crazy. These are all crazy statements, and at some point, you know, just let them spew their untruths because it's going to wake up people to the realization that they're just extreme. And eventually, that'll be good news.
The divide in the city and the state will be the productive and the law abiding versus the political and the lawless. That seems to be the divide. It has nothing to do with race. It has to do with behavior and attitude.
Yeah. So I, you know, again, we're back to the pendulum swinging thing. It's swinging like crazy right now, swinging very far, but it's swinging almost like it's going to go upside down.
Something else too. I saw this story about District 65, which is Evanston-Skokie, which is run by a bunch of race hustling charlatans, Marxists. A disgusting group of people running a terrible school district in Evanston and Skokie. And they're just exhausted. They had to take this week off.
Oh, yeah, please.
Because they're just exhausted. And Carol Markowitz writes about this in New York Post, too. In Detroit, schools will close for three Fridays next month amid COVID concerns.
What?
The Virginia Beach City Public Schools decided to end school 2 hours early on seven Wednesdays over the next 3 months due to fatigued teachers. More than 20 public school districts across the country will be tacking on mental health days to the Thanksgiving break. So what's going on with the fatigued teachers? And we need to, we need more days off from school.
Well, you know, District 65 is probably one of the most interesting ones in Illinois. It's, like you said, Evanston-Skokie. They're the ones that have put white supremacy front and center of their analysis of what's wrong with their district. And you know, they did a study and the top three paragraphs, I can't remember what it was now, but they blame white supremacy and all the results. And so, you know, they're blaming COVID. They have a situation where they have lost control of, you know, educating their kids, and now they're just using every kind of social justice thing to get in the way of what they do. It's a damaged district on many fronts, and it gets a lot of attention for those problems.
But it's not over there. I mean, CPS too. You know, the bottom line is they don't have enough subs, and when you have a 2-day work week, people are going to call in. You know, say like I have a scheduled appointment, I can't make it, and they don't have enough substitute teachers to cover a classroom.
Well, and that's the big problem, right? Because obviously it falls, happens to be on Thanksgiving week where now they can take a whole week. And I hate to be so skeptical, and I know many teachers would like to teach, but I'm not surprised that the power of the unions there are gonna play games with this, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Carol Markowitz has a different bottom line, which I think she's on the mark. What's really happening is the bar was set in 2020. Schools don't matter, and kids don't matter. That's what's happening. And so what's the big deal? Remember, as she writes, kids are resilient, we're told. They'll be fine. So what if they sat home for a year staring at a screen with no interaction with their peers? And so what if they were forced to do this when all the science and said they should be in actual school? They'll bounce right back when the teachers' unions gave the okay for school to resume, and it'll just be that easy. It's not just that easy, including for the teachers. And so now they're just falling back on a premise from which they are operating, which is schools don't really matter except as third-party administrators to confer benefits and salaries to the adults. And the kids certainly don't matter. They'll resilient. They're resilient. It'll all get worked out somehow, some way.
Well, you're getting back to the power of the unions. And we've talked about this, that there are no stronger teacher unions in the country outside of Illinois. I don't think there's anybody that competes with them, especially the Chicago Teachers Union. And here's the problem, right, is that they've gotten the power to close whenever they want. Now they have whatever they may call some shortage or whatever, they have the power again to close the schools. Instead of trying to figure out how to keep them open, they just close them. And you know, we're going to be coming out with a report soon at WirePoints. And if you look at the results, it goes back to what you just said, Dan. They don't care. Many of these schools have become, and this is a sad commentary, some people don't like when I say it, but it's become a jobs program for the adults and a daycare program for the kids. Because if you look at the results that are coming out of the schools, that's exactly what it is. There is no education going on, and when we put out this data soon, it is an indictment of the school system in Illinois, and an indictment of the State Board of Education, and the billions that we spend on education for not.
And the point of school systems like District 65, Evans and Skokie, you know, beset by white supremacy in a district that's 90% Democrat socialist. But okay, the problem or the point of that. Look, we don't need 210 days to indoctrinate the kids. I mean, we can do that. We can get that done in a few months, and then we're done. Then we can coast, because that's the point of the schools. Get them, right politically. Turn them into little activists parroting our lines from our race-hustling, identitarian curriculum with all of our consultants and so on and so forth. And then just coast. That's what the schools are.
Yeah, and Dan, I mean, okay, and there's different angles to look at it. That's one from the politicization of it. The other one is just from the pure ineptitude. I think I talked about this a few weeks ago, but in Decatur, when I went down there and just looked at the black reading results for second through eighth grades, it ranged, so black meet or exceed reading results second grade through eighth grade, and it ranges somewhere from 2% can to something like 8% can. So you're 90% plus can't read at grade level, third through eighth grade.
No,
and, I don't know what that is, right? It's we can call it whatever we want, but it's pure failure, and it means that the kids are going to come out of that school unable to perform in civil society.
No problem. We'll give them a check and make sure they vote Democrat, and we'll just move on. Next generation, you're up. That's what we've done for the better part of half a century. Why stop now?
Yeah, I think it's just getting worse, right? I think it's once you get down to 2%, what's left?
2%. Dan and Amy, we're joined by Ted Dabrowski, president at WirePoints.com, all things Illinois policy related. Ted, thanks as always. Appreciate
it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, going back to the Kyle Rittenhouse interview by Tucker Carlson on his program, Carlson's program last night. In terms of looking prospectively, is there more litigation to come involving Kyle Rittenhouse, specifically defamation cases, perhaps against then-candidate Joe Biden, now president, as well as media outlets a la Nick Sandman, the Covington Catholic kid. Here's what Rittenhouse said to that.
I have really good lawyers who are taking care of that right now. So I'm hoping one day there will be some, there will be accountability for their actions that they did.
Okay, so you're intent on not, you're not going to let that go.
Like I said, really good lawyers are handling that.
Yeah.
They must be, because they told him if he's asked that question, just say really good lawyers are handling it, which
Perfect.
He did. For more on this, as well as the criminal trial, of course, pleased to be joined by Alan Dershowitz, Emeritus Professor of Law at Harvard. His new podcast, The Dersh Show, you see what he did there?
Yes.
The Dersh Show can be found on Spotify, YouTube, and iTunes. And his most recent book is The Case for Vaccine Mandates. We'll have to discuss that perhaps at another time. Professor Dershowitz, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Let's start with the possible civil case. And yeah. It was interesting because Rittenhouse used the phrase actual malice. So he's schooling himself or has been schooled on the standard
right.
against a public official like himself. But do you think it is worth Rittenhouse pursuing defamation against media outlets or even the president?
Not the president, because what the president said was just inferential. A picture was shown of Rittenhouse when he was talking generally about white supremacists. But anybody who directly called him a white supremacist or anyone who said that he carried illegally an AR-15 across state lines, or anyone who said that he had no business being in Kenosha, that he had no relatives there, people who made outright lies should be subject to a defamation under the First Amendment. The First Amendment makes an exception for malicious, deliberate, willful lies, and CNN engaged in those lies over and over and over again. And, you know, Don Lemon sitting there and saying he wasn't really crying, it was crocodile tears. Other people saying it was white privilege tears. Another woman saying that he should get the Oscar for winning the best performance. Those weren't matters of opinion. You know, fortunately, it was shown on live TV, and everybody could see it for themselves and know that Don Lemon was not telling the truth and that others were engaging in kind of racist characterization. If it was a young black man who was crying on the stand, they wouldn't have dared to challenge his authenticity or his credibility. So I have actually offered to share my research with the Rittenhouse defense team if they decide to bring a lawsuit against CNN. I'm bringing a lawsuit against CNN. As you may know, they doctored a tape of mine when I argued my case for President Trump in front of the United States Senate. They actually omitted certain statements from my tape. I said that if the president committed crimes, he could be impeached, and they omitted that and then had their commentators saying, oh, Dershowitz says even if a president commits crimes, murder, and other crimes, he can't be impeached. So, you know, I've done a lot of research against CNN. They have a long, long record of lying to fill their narrative. So, I hope we civil lawsuits, and I hope there is accountability for deliberate, willful lying that continued even after the verdict.
Well, yeah, that's and so after the verdict, our governor in Illinois tweeted this: carrying a loaded gun into a community 20 miles from your home and shooting unarmed citizens is fundamentally wrong. Would he have a case against Governor Pritzker?
No, not at all, because fundamentally wrong is a matter of opinion, number one. Mm-hmm. And he did bring a gun into Kenosha. He didn't bring it across state lines. But no, there would be no case against Pritzker, but there would be cases against anybody who calling somebody a vigilante may be a matter of opinion, and that's protected speech. But white supremacist is not an opinion. It's a fact. If you, for example, call somebody an anti-Semite, and there's no history that he ever said anything negative against Jews, or you call somebody, you know, a racist or anything like that, and there's no history of that, that's defamatory, and the courts have so held.
I wanted to add one more question about the media. This was actually raised by a caller, and it's sort of an interesting proposition, and I know how high the threshold is going to be here, but wanted your take on it. The idea when the media purposely engages in lying in such a way as to incite, arguably, you know, is there any line at which a member of the media can cross where they are part of a conspiracy to incite a riot and thus have criminal culpability for whatever results?
It's a very hard question. There are a few cases on that. During the genocide in Rwanda, the nation was held culpable because it incited people to go to people's home and kill them. In that case, it actually told them where the people lived. It's a very, very, very hard line to cross to have criminal liability for something that somebody says. Oliver Wendell Holmes once said, every idea is an incitement. So I don't think there's any real possibility. Also, the idea that he's a public figure, he's at most a qualified public figure. He's not a public figure. He's not like you and me. You're on the radio, I'm in the media. He's a kid who tried to do what he thought was the right thing. I'm not making a hero out of him, by the way. I think what he did, my view, is that he shouldn't have gone there and he shouldn't have been carrying an AR-15. But he's not really a public figure. He was thrust into public figuredom by the case itself. And so there's a kind of intermediate standard, but it's higher than just if they just went after somebody who was never in the public at all.
Now, as to the trial itself, you wrote about this in The Hill, that, you know, there's a general misunderstanding about the issue that was actually at bar at the trial. And the only issue, the issue in which the entire case turned, was did he have a reasonable fear for serious bodily harm or death, thus that the action he took was legal? And that's what the jury concluded he did.
Yeah, not only that, it's did the state prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he didn't have that fear? You know, the state has to prove the negative. It's a hard burden, but it's the law. It's the law in Wisconsin. It's the law in most states that the burden of proof is on the government to disprove self-defense. So it was not a hard or complicated case as a matter of law. If you listen to some of the Hollywood glitterati, I mean, the statements made by some Hollywood people were so unbelievably stupid after the verdict. I mean, they bore no reflection on the actual facts of the case themselves. But I guess if you're a Hollywood star, you're not bound by facts. You have the right to make up, after all, you're in fictional movies all the time. You might as well make up fictional stories about people. So there are potential lawsuits also against some members of the Hollywood community for whom there's always a narrative. You know, people just have this concept of intersectionality. There's a story, and the story has to be told. For example, in Brooklyn, the day after the verdict, there were large demonstrations right where I was born and grew up in Brooklyn. And the demonstrations were led by people carrying Palestinian flags and yelling, Intifada, Intifada. You know, for people like that, if there's a problem anywhere in the world, of course the Jews are to blame. Of course Israel is to blame, because that's part of it. And the name of the group that was leading it was Black Lives for Palestine. What's that? One thing have to do with the other. But to be an intersectionalist, you have to be willing to buy every aspect of their narrative at all. And that's the problem. That's why we're such a divided country today.
Is there any question in your mind as to whether or not the charges should have been brought in the first place?
That's what I was going to ask.
The charges against the man who testified on the witness stand that he first pointed the gun at him and then he was shot should never have been brought. The attempted murder charges should never have been brought. The others were close questions. I think if they had studied all the evidence, if they had really given the lawyers a chance to present their case, they probably wouldn't have brought it. It was a pretty clear case of self-defense. I mean, the only argument on the other side is that he provoked it. But the concept of provocation under Wisconsin law is very, very narrow. And you don't put on a whole week of a person. The provocation has to occur imminently, right at the time. So I think it was a mistake probably to bring the case, unlike the case in Georgia, which was the right case to bring the case that's now pending where three people shot a black man who was jogging. That, too, was an easy case on the other side. It shouldn't be brought. And we'll see what the verdict is. But this case probably should never have been brought. And if it wasn't for the climate of the day, you know, it's a little bit like the Potter case, you know, the Officer Potter in Minneapolis who made a mistake and pulled the wrong gun and shot somebody thinking that she was using her taser.
Right.
That case should never have been brought. That was an accident. It's a terrible, terrible tragedy, but not a crime. But political pressure was such that it was brought. Let's remember one thing that people forget. We are the only country in the history of the world, categorically, in the history of the world, that has ever elected prosecutors. Every other country, they're civil service, they're appointed, they're distinguished lawyers, they're not trying to run for the Senate, they're not trying to run for governor. In the United States, being a prosecutor means you want to be a senator or a governor, and you put your finger up to the wind, and you decide what's best for your political campaign. It's not the right approach, and it's what causes charging higher or charging cases that should never be charged, because they're not interested so much in justice as they are in their political careers.
Yeah, that's an interesting reform conversation about how we do state and local prosecutors. No question, because obviously it's not just an issue in Kenosha County. It's all over the country now with these Soros-funded right. prosecutors. He is Alan Dershowitz, famed Harvard Law professor emeritus. His new podcast, The Dersh Show, can be found on Spotify, YouTube, and iTunes. His most recent book, The Case for Vaccine Mandates. Professor Dershowitz, thanks as always for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy and the intellectual mess that is the left, not limited to law and order. Also on all things COVID related, including Big Pharma, Ryan Long parodies this nicely.
Hate big pharmaceutical companies, except for Pfizer. You know, I did go to Occupy Wall Street. Now I'm a little more concerned with occupying a space in my tattoo sleeve with my new Pfizer tat.
Pfizer?
You?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I watched the Martin Shkreli doc and it pissed me off what he did raising those prices. What an ethical company does is take money from the government to make the product, have the government force people to buy the product, get the government to pay for your commercials, then print money to subsidize it. If you asked me a couple years ago, I wouldn't have thought that I'd be wearing a big pharmaceutical company's t-shirt, but, you know, Pfizer's just different, you know what I mean? They're not like other companies. So they had to play a couple dollars back in the day for fraudulent marketing. Yeah, it's called faking it till you make it. Obviously, their haters are coming out of the woodworks now that they're on top. Yeah, my pronouns are Pfizer. I'd say about 50% of my identity is that I hate pharmaceutical companies and 50% of my identity is that I love Pfizer. Maybe I'd get Pfizer shaved in my head, sort of like black guys do with Nike. Do not get me started on fast food corporations unless you got a minute. Companies like McDonald's won't even pay people a living wage. You know, whereas a real company like You-Know-Who paid some of their employees, like Alan Borla, about $21 million last year. So, yeah, take notes, McDonald's. $21 million for one employee. They didn't have to do that. You a Pfizer guy or...
Yeah, I already got Pfizer, man. Yeah.
Pfizer?
I got the booster, too.
Are you going to get a second or third booster or just the one?
No, I'm going to continue to roll up.
You might do the fourth? I'm hoping to get to five.
Yeah.
Respect, bro. I'm sort of like a feel the burn guy, and I know Bernie Sanders said we need to end the greed of Big Pharma, and I do agree with them that we need to end the greed of 99.9999999% of Big Pharma. You know, the big banks, they're against you. If they had any of your own interest at heart, the S&P 500 would just be Pfizer 500 times. Pfizer should team up with Nike, who I hate, to make a sneaker. Bezos! Yeah, the only way that I would be caught dead with a Tesla is if Pfizer acquired the company. 10 things Big Pharma doesn't want you to know. I mean, I'll post this after I scan through it to make sure there's nothing derogatory with my guys in there. Yeah, I wish the CEO of Goldman Sachs was right here right now. We'd throw hands. I just retweeted an article about why Big Pharma's bad and then put Pfizer's logo in my Twitter handle.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Trust the teachers. That's what Frederick Douglass biographer David Blight writes in a piece in The Atlantic. Pulitzer Prize winning David Blight. And his Prophet of Freedom biography on Frederick Douglass is actually very good, but he's very wrong on this. Trust the teachers? No. Sorry. Or at least take the Reagan position of trust but verify. Abigail Schreier writing at her Substack. Last month, the California Teachers Association held a conference advising teachers on best practices for subverting parents, conservative communities, and school principals on the issue of gender identity and sexual orientation. Speakers went so far as to tout their surveillance of students' Google searches, internet activity, and hallway conversations in order to target sixth graders for personal invitations to the LGBTQ clubs, while actively concealing these clubs' membership roles from participants' parents. This was a conference in Palm Springs held October 29th to the 31st. The conference entitled the 2021 LGBTQ Plus Issues Conference Beyond the Binary, Identity and Imagining Possibilities. And three participants sent Schreier audio files of the conference. So she's citing what they are saying, and she's got the audio backup to prove it. For example, one club leader, teacher, middle school, Buena Vista Middle School in California, because we are not official, we have no club rosters, we keep no records. In fact, sometimes we don't really want to keep records because if parents get upset that their kids are coming, we're like, yeah, I don't know, maybe they came. You know, we would never want a kid to get in trouble for attending if their parents are upset. The advice to middle school teachers who run LGBTQ clubs is keep no records so you can plead ignorance of the membership with the members' parents. In fact, middle school teacher Kelly Baraki can be heard in the same session describing having named her club the Equity Club and then UBU rather than the more ubiquitous GSA clubs, Gay Straight Alliance. There was also a workshop titled How We Run GSAs in Conservative Communities. In that address, speakers described the challenges for activist teachers working in the context of a politically mixed community in Central California with many conservative parents. Got to work around them. Mm-hmm. For those paying attention, writes Schreier, the educators who guide California teachers in the creation of middle school LGBTQ clubs asserted the following. They struggle to maintain student participation in the clubs. Many parents oppose the clubs. Teachers surveil students electronically, they're like Google searches, as I mentioned, to ferret out students who might be interested, after which the identified student is recruited to the club via a personal invitation. Trust the teachers. Recruiting students, surveilling students to advance the teacher's agenda. For more on this topic, pleased to be joined by Terrence Newsom. He's a Downers Grove High School father. He has two kids at the Downers Grove High Schools. I don't know which one.
Twins, freshmen, Downers Grove South.
Downers Grove South. He spoke out at the meeting last week that we documented here with respect to the genderqueer book in the library at Downers South. And we've talked about that book before. We've had parents from around the country read excerpts from that book. In some places, it's part of the curriculum. In some places, it's just in the library. But as we're to understand, if we're not going to be purposely naive, it's in the library for the purpose of ultimately making its way into the curriculum because you have movements afoot, like the one sponsored by the California Teachers Union, to recruit and indoctrinate, as is described, using audio from their workshop. Abigail Schreier documenting it. Terrence Newsom, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Thank you for having me on.
So what happened at that that meeting of the Downers High School Board, and why were you there?
Yes, I have freshman twins. This is all brand new to me, the school board stuff. Became aware right before my kids started freshman year. I started seeing all the stuff that's happening at our board meeting from other parents, across the board, from the mass, the CRT, sex ed. They throw the parents out of the board meetings. They interrupt them, disrespectful. And then I found out about how, we can't even really, talk about the images that are in the book and how
that's
bad they
disgusting.
Were. I was kind of shocked. And, I was very clear to the board, to Hank Thiel, the superintendent who defends this book, that this is, all about anti-porn. It's not about sexuality or homophobic. Want all like porn out of the school. As a matter of fact, I have a meeting today at 3 o'clock with the school specifically about this, had to fill out the paperwork. I asked the principal, can you please bring any of the like type heterosexual pornographic books, because you're calling us homophobic. The kids who spoke said there's very similar, if not worse, books. and please bring them because I'd like to have those removed as well. He responds back to me, this is only about genderqueer. So I responded back, then I'm assuming that if there is no like books that are heterosexual pornographic, then there aren't any. And we'll see how that meeting goes at 3 o'clock today.
So you were, you and others who attended and spoke out against this book and porn in the classroom or in the school were characterized as Proud Boys, right-wing extremists. There was the General Assembly, Illinois General Assembly passed a resolution condemning people like you for just being white supremacists, Proud Boys, white nationalists trying to advance your extremist agenda. Are you a Proud Boy?
No, I'm not a Proud Boy. It's kind of ironic. You had the news break before we jumped on. They mentioned Mary Lemansky, who just stepped down. Well, Mary Lemansky is one of the four big mouth communist liberals that attacked all the parents there and saying there's hate has no place here. So, you know, she mentioned karma. Well, it's kind of funny that karma came around and got her this week and exposed her for what she really is. And these same individuals constantly meet with some of the board members and the superintendent as well. What happened before the board meeting? There was Antifa, you know, so you probably saw that big Sun-Times article, right? And they really focused on the Proud Boys. Prior to the board meeting, there's a group called Wake Up 99 that was promoting it for other parents that are part of a group that are trying to fight some of this stuff as well. Antifa posted their flyer, and then there was another flyer they put side by side. And it was from the Proud Boys, because I guess there's a website address in the bottom right. And it said, school board. This is what the one they said was Proud Boys. It said, school board showdown. All parents need to stand up against this pedophile's indoctrination that's happening in our schools. It had the address, and it said, wake up. And then it showed the graphic pictures. So that flyer, regardless of who made it, turned it into white supremacist races that were supposed to show up. Antifa was the only ones promoting it. If there were Proud Boys in the audience trying to intimidate anybody, they did a really poor job of it because we couldn't tell who was who. And then the only images that came out was from Antifa after the board meeting. Mine and other fathers' images were posted, you know, attacking us on the Antifa site. And then the only so-called violence or whatever, not even violence, but the other father received a threatening phone call, filed with the police department. He called, you know, he called me. I haven't, you know, fortunately haven't received any yet. So it's kind of ironic that these folks from the left are trying to say that, you know, this is, you know, racist, white supremacist, and I think they're really just trying to divert from, you know, this is pornography, no matter what they try to say, and they all have the same talking points. So the principal, both principals, the superintendent, I even reached out to the mayor of Downers Grove, who never called me back, and the mayor of Darien. And the mayor of Darien called me back after he spoke to the principal, and he had the exact same talking points.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that this falls under inclusion. It falls. It's a comic sketchbook, is how they all said it, right? We got this in emails, right? It's not really required reading, and it's only available in the library.
But so still, the fact that it's there, and you've got, you know, Tom Sawyer and Dr. Seuss are being canceled, but the smut is there for them to check out anytime they want.
Yeah, and they say, you know, your kids have access to cell phones and laptops. You know, these are all the talking points, right? And they could see worse. Just like, yes, that's true, and yes, it's my job as a parent to do my best to try to monitor that. But if you want to put pornography in my kid's school where you got 13, 14-year-old kids in there, and who are you to decide what's pornography or not, and who are you to decide to sneak it in, and we got to find it out ourselves, then we got to defend ourselves as not being homophobic only because of pornography, period. We don't want any pornography in there.
And just to, again, here, you have no affiliation with the Proud Boys. Are you political in any way? Do you have an activist background?
Yeah. So just so you know, I was raised in the southwest side of Chicago. Uh-huh. Two unions for almost 30 years. My father worked for the City of Chicago Union. My uncle was the president of People's Gas Union. I'm all Democrats. I did nothing but a Democrat. I mean, I was, you know, you didn't even think about being a Republican. And then as I got older, I kind of gravitated in the last 10 years. Now my mother and father, who are in their 80s, are Republicans now. These are not Democrats. They're they're communist socialists. I mean, all these things that they're trying to do, you know, to our country, to our children, you know, like the mask, you know, the mask mandate.
Right.
You know, this guy Hank Thiel is like, you know, like we had an 80-some-year-old man speaking, I don't know, a couple board meetings ago. He, you know, he was a Republican, obviously, and he was trying to read, and the mask came down just a little bit below his nose. They all attacked him. Put your mask on. And then we got photos of them having board, you know, Illinois you know, DOE meetings, all, you know, with their masks off, laughing and stuff. And then another thing, they keep telling the parents that we have not taught CRT. We are not teaching CRT. No, but you are in the curriculum, and some of the things that are in the school, some of the things that are being said to our children is CRT. They're just trying to, you know, pivot around it, like the technical terms of teaching it within the college, you know, college right. education.
Well, what are some things that they're saying to the kids?
Well, one of the things I could say personally from my child, right before he graduated eighth grade in the feeder school, he came back like 3 weeks before his graduation. He's like, Dad, you know, I was, you know, working on my laptop. Dad, he goes, my teacher today, she told me there's no such thing as the American dream. I'm like, what? I go, you sure? He goes, yeah, we were talking. She said, there's no such thing as the American dream. It's not attainable for everyone. It's overinflated, and it's not as big as it is, especially since not everybody could get it. And I called the principal, and I said, you know, my twins are graduating in 3 weeks, but this is unacceptable. I said, I hope I heard my son wrong. And I told him what I heard. And I said, the kids at that age, no matter what their sex, race, or whatever, they should think they could go to the moon, to Mars, if they wanted. None of this should be taught, you know? And then he called me back and said, well, yes, Mr. Newsom, you're correct, but it was more of a dialogue with the students. She wasn't teaching, which is, well, you know, BS. You shouldn't be trying to subtly influence them that.
And this other group, Wake Up 99, that's a separate and distinct group that, and this was conflated by the press corps in terms of the flyer from one group, and then Wake Up District 99 is a different parents group, and that was all, of course, thrown together because the effort by the media is to paint everybody as you know, some rabble rousing Trump voters.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of ironic too. Is I talked to the reporter. And I said, hey, I go, come on. I go, why aren't you putting all these images in there of Antifa and the threatening, you know, and he called the one father and he goes, well, we called, but we can't really prove it's Antifa. Well, they're making all these other assumptions to try to come out with a strong opinion on the parents fighting and all this stuff, right? It was very clear. It's a very biased report. And then in the same article, they got a Hispanic guy supporting a white supremacist company. I'm like, organization, and I'm like, wow, maybe you didn't get the message.
So there's perhaps some confusion. I mean, I'll you know, some of these parents like you who are just sort of getting into this, and you just see flyers protesting the same thing that you want to go and complain about, and then, you know, somebody has one perspective, and another group has a different perspective, or they're coming at it from a different angle, and it just gets thrown together. I mean, this is what the press does, is they take somebody who maybe not coming from a good place, but is pointing to the same thing that good people coming from a good place are pointing to, and say, well, everybody is that guy, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, Dan, they had riot shields there. I took pictures of them. At least there's tons of
riot shields at a Downers South, at a Downers school board meeting.
And this is from some of the other mothers. I didn't see it. There's a group of mothers that's been doing this for a while. You know, my kids are freshmen, and they have never won anything. These people are so arrogant to them, the board. But they insist there was two FBI agents there, based on how they looked. They sat and they stood out. They, you know, addressed the Hank Fields. They walked out. I don't know if that's true or not. But in some of this article, Kasten and, you know, they're saying that, you know, the federal authorities are aware. I don't know if you saw what Kasten put out in that article.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, I mean, I don't need to read it, Kasten. I can predict what he's going to say. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, in my view, you know, again, I was raised a Democrat. They're not, you know, what they are. We're in a war for the future for our children. I mean, and we're losing the war. And more parents have to get involved, and more, honestly, more fathers got to get involved to help the moms at the school boards, because it's like, you know, it's me and like another guy or two. It's all these mothers, you know, and we got to fight for our kids because, you know, they own the media, they own the school boards, they own everything. And unless parents don't understand how serious this is and how they're going to continue to try to indoctrinate our children to support them, it's like Hitler Youth, and it's very serious. And the media has a level of credibility, but, you know, it's not like we're in China or Korea, right? but they are probably as bad and more effective as being in China, Korea, because they're supposed to be independent, and they're not.
He is Terrence Newsom. He's a father of twins at Downers South High School. He spoke at that meeting last week, and you heard him characterize how it was covered by the media versus why he was there and other fathers and moms were there and what they're attempting to do and the kind of response they're getting from the school district. That's Downers Grove, leafy, upper income, Republican once upon a time, about 4 years ago, Downers Grove. And now look what it's become. Terrence Newsom, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck, and good luck with your meeting today. That should be really something.
Yeah, I'm going to bring my big posters, show them those images so they can look at them right in front of them as
All
I
right.
sit there.
If they,
later.
You know, if they try to like perform a frontal lobotomy, give us a call.
Yeah, we'll
send people.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Newsom joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's morning answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I'll tell you what, maybe we should get the Women's Tennis Association on the job of finding the origin to the coronavirus. Maybe we should get the WTA, because that's the entity, as far as I can tell, that's been the most aggressive anti-Chinese communist entity in America to date, at least over the last 2 years, or the last year that President Biden's administration has been in power, you know, with their search for proof of life of tennis star Peng Shuai and the propagandizing and censoring that's going on as they search for answers. They're willing to walk away from hundreds of millions of dollars in business with the Chinese communists, as contrasted from the NBA. We talked about this a bit yesterday, but let's pick it up again. There was a report last week that was published in the journal Science by Michael Worobey, who is a virology expert at the University of Arizona, who concludes that the COVID-19 originated in a wet market in Wuhan, which is a pretty big turnaround for both Science, the journal, and would represent a turnaround from Fauci and the assembled public health Illuminati in this country when they refused to even connect China to it in the early stages of our awareness of the virus as it was spreading, and we were attempting to quote unquote slow the spread. And then since, it's been more likely than not it was a wet market, but leaving open the possibility that it wasn't, in the wake of information suggesting the U.S. government has been funding the Wuhan Virology Lab, providing grant funds to the Wuhan Virology Lab, that Tony Fauci was aware or should have been aware of that funding, and that he was being backed up by grant recipients like EcoHealth to continue to pour water on the notion that the virus originated in that virology lab. Well, we've got another offering on the topic. Matt Ridley is a best-selling author. He's a fellow of the Royal Society of Literature and of the Academy of Medical Sciences, and a conservative hereditary peer with a seat in the House of Lords across the pond in the UK. He has a new book entitled Viral, The Search for the Origin of COVID-19. He joins us now. Matt, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you. Good afternoon. Good morning to you.
Good morning. So what about that piece that was published by Worobey from the University of Arizona in Science last week? How do you react to his claim that it most certainly was a wet market in Wuhan?
Yeah, well, Michael Worobey's paper is a good bit of work. It's he's done some interesting analysis on who the early patients were and how one of them in particular actually got symptoms later than we thought, and therefore it's another one who's the earliest, and he has got connections to the wet market. But we knew about these people already. There's nothing new here. I mean, we knew since May that his first case did not fall ill on the 8th of December, but fell ill about a week later, for example. And what has not been forthcoming is any direct evidence of anybody getting infected by an animal in that market. We know that the market was a place where a lot of people infected each other. That has been evident since May 2020, when the Chinese authorities released information on what they found in the market, which was a lot of evidence of virus on tabletops and doorknobs and sewage and things like that, but no evidence of virus in any of the products being sold, let alone any live animals. So actually, Michael Warraby's evidence is definitely not the index case, the patient zero. Nobody thinks that it was that late. Everybody thinks it was in November or October. Michael agrees with that. So it's been very badly reported, this paper, in my view. It doesn't actually move the dial very much. The market is a possible first place for it to start, but with zero evidence, as I say. No animal that's been infected has been found there. The other possibility is the Wuhan Institute of Virology Laboratory, which is the biggest research institute working on bat-borne SARS-like coronaviruses in the world, which was collecting them from all over Southeast Asia, as well as China, and bringing them to Wuhan and researching them and juicing them up in some cases. So that possibility remains very strong. At the end of writing our book, Alina Chan and I, and she's a brilliant molecular biologist from Harvard and MIT, we come to the conclusion that the lab theory is more likely than the market theory now. But we don't know. We need more information, and it's shocking that we're not getting it.
What's the basis by which you and your colleague conclude that it's more likely that it was the lab versus the wet market?
Well, the fact that 80,000 animals have been tested in China and not a single one was found to carry the virus. In the case of SARS, we had found a connection with markets within 2 months, the same in the case of MERS in the Middle East. So by now, with our much superior technology, 10 and 20 years on, we should have been able to find exactly what the route by which food handlers or chefs or other people were getting infected. But also, what has come forward about what the work that was going on at the Wuhan Institute of Virology involved has got more and more extraordinary. And when we, until a couple of months ago, Alina Chan and I did not think that there would be any evidence forthcoming that the Wuhan Institute of Virology was deliberately putting a cleavage site into the genome of viruses there, which is a way of increasing their infectivity, although we knew that they had done similar experiments on other kinds of viruses. And then a document came to light in September, which showed that the EcoHealth Alliance had applied to the Pentagon for a grant to do exactly that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this could have been useful information to have been volunteered a year and a half before.
Well, did anybody who worked at the Wuhan lab in question get sick from the coronavirus?
Well, that's a really good question. The U.S. intelligence community says that it has evidence that three researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, or three people who worked there, I should say, did fall sick in November 2019, sick enough to go to hospital, and that their symptoms included ground glass opacities in the lungs, which is a characteristic feature of COVID-19. Now, if that's true, that is extraordinarily important evidence. I've got no way of confirming whether it's true or not. I don't have the security clearance, but I've talked to intelligence officials and they assure me that it is true. So, but what I do know is that neither the World Health Organization nor anyone else outside China has been given a list of who the first patients were, what their professions were, where they worked, where they lived. That would be very useful information. The World Health Organization was given a so-called summary of that data, but not the actual individual cases. There was an excuse used about not invading their privacy, but it's perfectly easy to anonymize these cases while describing more details of them. So that's a crucial bit of information that we need. Who were the people who first fell sick?
Well, so if your source is correct, then what would be the basis for, or let me ask it a different way. Do you believe that Western governments, including the U.S., are helping China cover this up for geopolitical reasons because they have other interests in dealing with China?
Well, I wouldn't go quite that far, but I do think that Western governments have been surprisingly slow to press on this issue. When Australia asked for a full independent inquiry, it was slapped with trade sanctions. The Biden administration has continued roughly the same stance that the Trump administration did, that it thinks that a lab leak is on the table and needs to be looked at. Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, has been quite robust about that. But I've been pressing the British government to take up this issue. It's a leader in biotechnology research around the world. It could easily play a role in this. And I'm frankly not getting anywhere. You know, I'm told in private that there's a great deal of sympathy with the idea that it might have come from a laboratory, but there is definitely a mood of don't rock the boat with China. And, you know, you can understand that to some degree. But I'm afraid this issue is just too important. People say to me, we're down to find out, because if we did, it might lead to a row with China. Well, I'm sorry, that's not a good enough excuse not to find out.
Is there a possibility we may never find out?
It's a possibility, but I'm relatively optimistic that we will one day find out. There was an accident in Sverdlovsk in Russia in 1979 involving anthrax, which was denied as a leak from a bioweapons plant for many years, including an independent investigation by outsiders. Eventually, about 15 years later, whistleblowers came forward and told the whole story, and it was indeed a laboratory accident that caused it. So it may take 15 years. It may take a change of regime, which is not a very hopeful prospect. But there are people in China who know a lot more about what happened, and eventually I think the information will come out.
Well, right, and the slow walking, I mean, from perspective here, you had Joe Biden make a big show of saying we're going to task the intelligence agencies to use their resources to come up with an answer to the origin question, and they're supposed to report back to me in 90 days. That was over the summer, and the report back was essentially inconclusive, which doesn't really square with what you're saying some sources within the intel community understand to be true. So it leads one to be very skeptical about governments in the West, including here in America. Slow walking is one way to put it, but it just seems to me there's not an interest in discovering the origin, because then there would be consequences demanded of the public that politicians do not want to impose.
That may be true. Certainly in writing our book, which is called Viral, Alina Chan and I found that we got relatively little useful information out of mainstream journalists, mainstream politicians, mainstream scientists, and the intelligence community. Our best sources were so-called open source analysts. These are people who know how to explore the internet and find obscure Chinese documents that are hidden away in corners of the World Wide Web, and that, you know, are not secret, but are just very useful. And a number of these people were incredibly helpful in uncovering vital information about the work of the Wuhan Institute of Virology, about the viruses they had not admitted to, which they then had to admit to after we exposed these documents, about the fact that they changed the names on some of the viruses, about the fact that they had a database with 22,000 entries in it at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, 15,000 of which are bat viruses, which they have not shared with the West, even though that database is intended to help with averting pandemics. It's as if they're waiting for the next pandemic before they share it. It went offline on the 12th of September 2019, which we're rather puzzled by, but it's never come back.
I'm not going to be here for the next pandemic.
Well, you know, it's in a related story. I mean, we talked about this before we brought you on, about these massive protests around Western Europe and even the Eastern Bloc. I mean, Vilnius, Lithuania, there was a huge protest against vax mandates. Some of the protests are against vax mandates. Other protests, like in London, against the vaccine passports. One is, you know, what is the state of affairs with respect to COVID policy in England? And two is, I mean, you, just by those protests alone, could you imagine if all of this was done and we had somebody that had cooked this up and released it and then covered it up with the silence or slow walking of Western governments? I mean, there would be hell to pay, to say it lightly.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, there are millions of people dead. We owe it to them to find out what happened. But there are hundreds of millions who are inconvenienced, whose lives have been turned upside down and made much more difficult in all sorts of ways. I mean, I'm very pro-vax. I think the vaccines are a good thing and we should have them. But I think some of the mandatory policies to try and force them on people are backfiring, particularly vaccine passports, which might have made sense when vaccines stopped transmission. But we now know that in the case of the Delta, they don't really stop transmission. So the reason for vaccine passports has been changed to simply force people into getting vaccinated. I think this is counterproductive. I think this is going to stiffen people's backs and make them very suspicious. I'm all for persuading people to take the vaccines as hard as we can, but I don't like the idea of forcing them.
He is Matt Ridley, bestselling author, fellow at the Royal Society of Literature and the Academy of Medical Sciences, and a conservative hereditary peer with a seat in the House of Lords. The new book, Viral, The Search for the Origin of COVID-19. Matt, thanks for joining us again, and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.